Did you miss me, gang? Oh, yes. I can already hear the wise guys out in Queens saying, yeah, we missed you like we missed that cold sore we had last week. You get kind of affectionate to it. Look at that thing. Like missing art out there. And that tweet says, did you miss me? I said, yes, like the time I had the wart taken off. Oh, and now, here is the star of our show. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I tell you, society is changing and improving every day. You know, it is. Yes, it is. I have received intelligence reports that now people who feel inferior about their garbage, as you know, if you live in the big city, you know, there's a garbage can out in front of your apartment, and people walk past and see your garbage. And if you feel inferior about the quality of your garbage that you've been putting out, well, you know, a lot of Coke bottles and plastic containers containing the remains of last week's hamburgers and stuff. You know, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about second-rate garbage. You can now subscribe to a service where every month you are supplied with a supply of very elegant empty containers from such things as imported pate, elegant wine bottles, cellophane wrappings of imported Belgian cookies, petit fours, and all that sort of thing. And every couple of days you just use this. It's a month supply. You just let it out, you know, daily. You throw out one more great looking can. And your status will rise tremendously in your neighborhood. Of course, if certain neighborhoods, as was pointed out to me by one of my friends here, he says, you know, in his neighborhood, if you throw out a bag marked Nathan's Hot Dogs, he says, they're already thinking you're putting on airs in his neighborhood. and of course, in certain neighborhoods, if you start throwing out cans that are a little too elegant, you're liable to get get ripped off within 5 minutes. Somebody spot that coming out, you know. They said, well, the guy's, you know, I mean, he's buying the family size Coke now. The son of a gun must be nothing but dough. And the next thing you know, there's ripped open drawers and that sort of thing. You guys, these are the little niceties that are adding to our civilization, you know. Another service for those of you out there. Of course, this is in the days of advancing anonymity, the search for social meaning. Haven't you been searching over the years now for your context, your place in the great vast scheme of existence? Of course. But you didn't know you were doing that? Well, that's true. Some people, you know, it is true that there's some people are so low down the evolutionary scale that they do not know that there's such a thing as the vast scale of human existence. They just don't know of these things. It's like a turtle sitting on a log. He's not aware of the fact that he is part of a large genus of biological creatures of which he is only one representative. It never crosses his murky mind, where do I stand vis-a-vis the manta ray? You know, never does. At least we have no evidence to the fact that it does. I'm sorry to report. This is not an anti-turtle remark, by the way. I don't want any turtle cuckoos out there to be immediately writing me. It is not an anti-turtle remark. It is merely just an empirical objective remark which could be construed in any direction. You notice I'd make a great witness at Watergate. You always qualify everything. You never merely say, yeah, that's what he said. You say, to the best of my recollection, according to my notes of that date, it is conceivable he could have said that. Now, on the other hand, you see, you must always equivocate if you're going to be a good witness. You never come out and say, yeah, I done it. No way. Oh, no way. That would put the entire legal profession out of business if truth became fashionable. as opposed to a popular concept. I mean, fashionable, that's something else. I mean, it's easy enough to believe in truth and another thing to exercise your belief. But, you know, that's another... Here, I don't bring that, it's extraneous. Another great new service that I would like to report to you tonight, since this is public service time here on our little battle here tonight. There are some people, probably even some listening tonight, who might be in this unfortunate category, although it may be called fortunate under certain circumstances, who have achieved true anonymity in a society which is largely anonymous. Now, that's not only American. You know, people keep talking about the American society, but wherever you go in the world, with the population explosion and the explosion of IBMism and various other technological advances, and incidentally, the population explosion is a technological advance. Has it ever occurred to you that the population explosion is directly related to technology? That we technically have improved mankind? At least survivally speaking, not quantitatively speaking, or qualitatively speaking, put it that way. We have made sure now that more klutzes and clods survive past the age of seven, therefore to go on to become voters, and that bothers me. But that's something else. That's, again, another... shouldn't talk like this. But nevertheless, some people have achieved true anonymity in our time, which means that even their friends can't quite remember their name when they meet them. And in fact, some people have achieved such a degree of anonymity that their close relatives often confuse them with other relatives they once had who have now since left the scene. Yes, I met a guy. Listen, one of the most embarrassing moments I had in years. Fantastic moment. I'm going to tell you a true moment. I'm walking down 57th Street, you know. That's a great street. You know, walk along, you walk. I was walking east, as a matter of fact, from 6th Avenue. And this is a sort of an elegant area. You can imagine it, Herb, can't you? You've been there once or twice. You walk along there, see. well, you know, you Jerseyites have a tendency to have nosebleeds when you get up in that area there. It's pretty rich for your blood. And I'm walking east on 57th the other day, and I see coming along in the mob, the great horde of 1973 mankind charging towards me. I see this guy whom I knew at one point. I couldn't quite remember his name, you know, but I knew him. And I knew at one time that we had some kind of a professional relationship, but I couldn't remember his name, and I couldn't remember where it was, see. So he walks up, and he's with this woman, see. So he walks up to me. I felt kind of rotten about it. I always hate that, you know, running into somebody you can't remember his name. So immediately my head says, what the hell is this guy's name? Clifford? No, Clifford. Oh, Clifford. No. Huey? No. So I trapped. He says, how are you? And I said, hi. Oh, my God, it's you. He says, yeah. And there we are. I stand in the middle of 57th Street, see. And he says, oh, my God, hey, listen, do you ever see Marty? I thought to myself, Marty? Who the hell is he talking about, Marty? Do you ever see Marty? Oh, my God, you know, he's grown a beard? And, he's lost a lot of weight. He's drinking. I said, he is. Oh, that's too bad, you know. Oh, what do you mean too bad? I mean, it's better than he was. And I thought, better than he was. And we're standing there, and we're talking back and forth, see, and I'm trying to think who the hell he is, see. And I know that I'm not focusing right, because when you're trying to think of somebody's name and at the same time listen to what he's saying, obviously you're not concentrating on either. Well, I'm trying to think, where the hell did I see this guy? Where did I work with him? You know, what did I do with him? See? And then I notice an interesting thing in his eye. He has got a curious opacity of the eye, which I have recognized over the, you know, my days in the jungle. He, too, can't remember who I am. Well, I had my choice. My choice was either to turn and walk on and say, well, it's good to see you. I'm in a hurry. I'm on my way to you. By the way, I'm going to see Marty this afternoon, you know, or something like that. Try to fake my way through it. And I said to him, I opted for that very unpleasant thing, the truth, right? He said, He said, he said, you know, it's really good to see you. You know, it's really good. it's really good to see you. I said, it certainly is good to see you. By the way, I'm going to have to tell you something that may be a little embarrassing. He said, well, go ahead. I said, I don't remember you. I mean, I remember your face, but I don't remember your name. Your name. There's a funny look come on his face. Oh. Well, Harold. I'm Harold. Harold Cohen. Then there's a pause, and he says, by the way, what's your name? I said, Ed Clutterback. Incidentally, inventing a name, because I could see he was faking it at this point. I said, Ed Clutterback. And he said, oh, of course, Ed Clutterback. My God. Yeah, Henry the Fourth. You used to go down Henry, remember? I said, yeah, I sure do. Used to see Harry down there. Yeah. Oh, Harry, son of a... You know, I'll tell you, I saw Harry the other day. He was going by in a cab. I waved. So we started all over again. Well, at this point, this is getting a little boring, see? And then he turned, and it was very embarrassing. I thought at this point I'd already had the most embarrassing moment, but no, he says, hey, son, he says, listen, Ed, I want you to meet my wife. And he turns. He couldn't remember his wife's name. Now, if you think I'm kidding, I wonder how many guys have had this experience when they're out on the street and they meet some guy and they're with somebody they've known all their life. I mean, like their brother or something. And they say, I want you to meet my brother, Stanton. No, Cliffy. Yeah, it's Cliff. What the hell is the matter with me? I can't remember. This guy couldn't remember the name of his wife, and she gave him a look. I mean, it was like she had two flamethrowers, one in each eye. I said, oh, my God, that anonymity is creeping everywhere. Guy can't remember the name of his own wife. And I'll bet when he gets home, he's going to sit there, you know, and somebody's going to call up and say, is this Howard? No, this is can't remember his own name. Would you please bring me on some anonymous music, please? Sometimes wonder who I am, what the hell my name is really at, where I've come from, where I'm going, why the hell I'm here, who the devil am I? Oh, I am singing them identity blues. Where am I going? Why am I here? What the devil is happening anyway? All together now, sing. I do ba-ba-da-dee. I think I remember your name. Your face is very familiar. You look a little like I should know you. Where did we work together before? It seems to me we used to talk a lot. I can't remember your name. I can't remember my name. I can't remember what town I'm in. Thank you.
I can't remember anybody's name. I got them identity blues. I can't remember even what town or even, for God's sake, what year it is.
Thank you very much. Talk show, right? This is what the hell station is this? WGN? No, that's Chicago. KMOX, St. Louis, right? KWK? No, that's Cleveland. It's right on the tip of my tongue. No, it starts with a W. WGN. No, that's Chicago again. WBZ. This is W. That's not right. What would you please hold up the sign in there, Jerry? W-O... Of course! This is W-O-R, New York. Silly. W-O-R.
You don't have to know a lot about wines to know the time for Dubonnet is before. And there's hardly a soul who knows it's an aperitif. Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
Gee, what's he mean by that word aperitif? I thought aperitif were two pickpockets on vacation. Are you using too much sugar in your iced tea or iced coffee, gang? Well, you get Sweet and Low. Sweet and Low. Give me a little echo chamber there. Sweet and Low. The perfect sugar substitute. Sweet and Low. Sweet and Low. That was real nice. Sweet and Low, the perfect sugar substitute, sung for you with incredible feeling by me. Sweet and Low is featured at all fine food and drug stores. Who the hell wrote that down? It looks like it says drool stores. Have you figured out how to stay cool this summer? Well, if you can't figure it out, you know, sitting out there next to your great big... Hey, have you heard some of these great air conditioning spots on the air? There's a lot of companies that are kind of torn in between. Like I heard a spot the other day for, I think it was Con Ed, where they recommended that you go out and get an air conditioner. Yeah, after all, they're in the business of selling wattage, And on the other hand, they said, but then when you get it, don't use it very much. Hey, did you hear that spot? Oh, boy, you planned it both ways. Hey, Con Ed. Well, have you figured out how to stay cool this summer? Well, one of the best ways. Frenchmen don't care whether it's cool or hot because the way they live, And would you like to try the French way? Well, you start right out with a chilled bottle of red Beaujolais wine. You won't care what your name is after a couple of them bottles. That's good wine. Too, by the way, that is a real good wine. You agree? Jerry, it's good, this Alexis Lachine Beaujolais. It is excellent. Recommended personally, Alexis Lachine, the beautiful Beaujolais, and it's a very fresh, light, nice red wine. And incidentally, Beaujolais itself, as a wine type, is the most popular French wine in America, and quite probably in France too. I'd have to say. Would you guess that too, Jerry? I would have to say probably yes. But one great thing I remember about Alexis Lachine, while other wines have increased their prices, they are still at their same low price. And that's saying a lot. It's a good French wine. So, do it the Frenchman way, Start guzzling Beaujolais and you will not have any worry about your air conditioner. With a chilled bottle of Alexis Lachine Beaujolais, the anytime wine, imported by Bass Charrington Vintners, New York. Remembers the name, Alexis Lachine.
Alexis Lachine. Alexis Lachine.
Am I at the tutu? Hey, did you like my identity blues? was not bad, was it? I mean, that's very apropos. Whenever I sing, I like to sing stuff that has real relevance. Yes, indeed. Well, I heard that on the Barry Farber show the other night. Yes, there was some guest that kept saying, "Well, Barry, I believe that my book is relevant to the situation." And I thought, well, I like that pronunciation better. Relevant. It has much more swing to it. Pizzazz. You pick up a lot if you just keep listening. You got to keep your old ears open, your pores open. Relevant. And I like to sing relevant songs, and nobody ever sings about that. I can't remember what day it is, what time it is. I can't remember who's president. and I really believe that with the day of advancing a constant barrage of news. I mean, there's some stations that 24-hour news, all over the dial news and the television. There's news, all kinds of stuff. Newspapers, magazines. I just think that people actually remember less than they used to remember when there was very little to remember. No, it's very hard to remember anything. No, it really is. I mean, crises and everything comes so fast now, it's almost impossible to remember the good old days when they had the Vietnam War. And, already I can just see, guys are already getting nostalgic about that, There'll have to be songs about that. I remember my days in Quantri province study. And, it's just got to happen. The designing a special hat, for the veterans of Vietnam. Well, yes, you've seen the Legion hats, and the Legion hat, of course, is actually based on the World War One hat, the World War One, what they called the overseas cap, and of course that's not relevant any longer. No way. And so they're designing a relevant hat. It's made out of straw, like a coolie hat. Sits down, and it's got badges on the side of it. Do you mind of course, when you talk about the relevant songs, I wish I had it here tonight. I would love to sing "The Bear Meets the Train" tonight, because it's truly relevant. Speaking of bears, I didn't want to bring up the subject here because I know there's a lot of nervous people, especially you, Herb. You've been very nervous. I've noticed some guys. Yes, I think. Do you know that nervousness has a lot to do with myopia? That the more nervous you are, the more you tend to wear thick glasses. And that's right, Herb. And by the way, you can disguise yourself anytime you want. Just take your glasses off. Nobody'd know you. of course, when you take your glasses off, you look vaguely like Harold Teen, a very gommy Harold Teen. You know who Harold Teen was? The way he was in the comic strips. He was, he was an early Peanuts. Yeah, they had this girl named Lillums. You remember that? And I remember, the first time I actually really studied Harold Teen, I was about 10 or something like that, standing out on the playground at the Warren G. Harding School, and this guy named Thurston, we had this kid named Cliffy Thurston. I've never mentioned Thurston because there are certain kids, and there are certain kids that when you're a boy, I don't know whether girls get this, but males do. They develop an intense, almost pathological dislike for certain other males in their class. I mean, really, you really hate them. And you even, there's a guy I still hate, and he did some stuff that I still unforgivable. Still unforgivable. He was a total clod. I mean, this kid was in our, there wasn't one male in our entire, in all my entire grade school that ever said anything other than "get the hell out of here" when he would show up. And that was Thomas Watts. The name, he was a rotten name. Thomas Watts. He had a fat, gommy face. And, the typical fat, gommy face. And he had glasses that looked like flashlight lenses, with tape on them. And he sweated. Well, the kind of guy, the Thomas Watts. And so Thomas Watts was just universally, you've heard the expression, the figure of fun. Thomas Watts was a figure of scorn. Well, he was like Miniver Chief, child of scorn. And Watts did something to me which I have never outlived in my own mind. Now I'm gonna. I learned a lesson this way. How do we learn our life lessons? Well, some people never learn them. And what is a life lesson? A life lesson can be primarily survival. I mean, you learn how to survive and to flourish in the jungle. Now, a tiger learns his life lessons at his mother's knee or at his mother's claw, right? And by the time he's 6 or 7 months old, no longer is he afraid of turtles. It's the other way around, right? Turtles now begin to hide from tiger. Well, now, how does it happen? Well, the big tiger says, look, you're a tiger. You don't take any guff from them turtles. And when you're a little tiny tiger, you tend to get scared of turtles. But at the age of 6 months, after listening to the talk from the big tigers, he goes out and he starts knocking turtles around. Well, that's a life lesson. Now, the turtle, on the other hand, has learned from early turtledom that frogs are afraid of turtles. Now, when he was a very tiny turtle, he would spook when a large frog would appear on the horizon. Well, as he grew, other turtles said, what the hell, you're running from the frogs, for God's sakes. There's one thing a turtle don't do is run from a frog. At which point, he says, no kidding, even that big one down there in the pad there, that big mother there with a big mouth. And at which point, the other says, watch me get him. And the next thing you know, the frog is swimming like hell and hiding under the weeds. And that little turtle has learned a lesson. That is called a life lesson, as opposed to the junk you learn in school. Well, I mean, you know, I spent one whole semester fooling around with the Punic Wars. Now, ever since that time, I have not had one question arising, not once, regarding the Punic Wars. I tried to bring them up in a sales meeting here the other day. Yeah. Got me no damn place. I was sitting there, and the manager was saying, well, them guys over at WMGM, and them guys... He's going on. I says, wait a minute. This reminds me of an episode in the Punic Wars. At which point, the sales manager, for God's sakes, will you shut up and stick with the subject of the meeting? Well, it was a nasty meeting, and I tried to lighten it and give it a little historical perspective by bringing in the Punic Wars to no avail. Incidentally, since that time, I have not been invited to any sales meetings. You don't bring up that kind of stuff. First of all, I know what happened. I could see the opaque look on their faces. Not one of them knew what the hell the Punic Wars was. Now, so there you go. Now, on the other hand, I have to tell you, though, that the life lessons that we learn are not necessarily the ones we want to learn. It's a very important concept. Now, it is assumed that the turtle enjoyed learning the fact that turtles chase frogs. However, what he did not like to know, which he learned a couple of months later when he's out chasing a frog, is that quite often great northern pike chase turtles, and successfully. And once you're down in the gut of a great northern pike and you are a turtle, there ain't no place to go. At that point, you've learned a life lesson too late. So the life lessons we learn come gradually. And one of the worst ones I ever learned was involving that damn Thomas Watts. Watts, fat-faced Watts. I'll tell you, Watts was insignificant to begin with. He was a W, for starters. Now, I was part of the alphabetical ghetto myself. Nobody in the alphabetical ghetto made it. Schwartz, Chester Wisniewski, me, Helen Weathers, we're sitting in the back. We can't hear. We can't see. We're sitting always in the back of the room because we're seated alphabetically. And among us was Watts. Now, Watts was born to it. The others of us, we fought it. Watts, he belonged in the back of the room, and he wallowed in it. And so Watts was never picked on anything. Once in a while, like most figures of scorn, he would make an attempt at respectability. We'd be out on the playground, you know, choosing up sides for a softball game. Some of you have gone through that, I'm sure. Watts would actually try to play. He would come out and want to play, which was, of course, ridiculous. I remember that would be, you know, like Flick and Farkas or somebody would be choosing up. So we'd choose up, and there'd be Watts standing after all the choosing up, standing there with a glove. And Flick would say, "What do you want?" Watts said, "I want to play." Farkas said, "You want to play? What the hell do you want to play for? Get out of here." Well, of course, then there'd be a lot of nastiness, and Miss Shields would come out and yell that we got to let Watts play. You know that whole scene. Well, anyway, Watts was that kind of guy. And late in my seventh grade period, the teacher, incidentally, at that point, was a lady named Miss Harris. Miss Harris, she was kind of a soft, round lady with rimless glasses, played the piano in the auditorium sessions. And she always played the same thing, you know, in the auditorium sessions. And Miss Harris was a kindly, nice lady. And, you know, you have certain teachers, a very motherly type. Well, one day I am out in the playground, and something Watts did. I don't recall at this time what it was, but it was just something. All the endless bile which I had accumulated in my soul for Watts suddenly exploded. You know, there's a point, what they call a point of combustion. And I chased Watts for about 34 blocks. I would say at least 34. Never knew he could run that good. Watts, we ran up and down alleys. I was just yelling, you know. And he, every once in a while, he would turn around and holler back. And I remember he was hollering curious things. Like, I remember him hollering. I still remember a thing that Watts called me. He now has arrived on his back porch, which, of course, was safety. That was a demilitarized zone. You do not get up on Watts's back porch and, you know, kick the, you know, daylights out of him up on the back porch. See, he got up on the back porch, and he turned around. His glasses are all clouding up, and he's sweating. He hollers, "You ham bone!" Ham bone? I had never, you know, kids have various things they call each other, but that was a great moment of creativity. Maybe, incidentally, a clue to Watts's later obscenities. He hollered, I said, what do you call me? He says, "You ham bone." Ham bone. I never heard it. You know, it hit me funny right there, see. And I said, "Oh, boy, what a stupid ham bone. Well, boy, if you ever get off that porch, I'm going to kill you, Watts." Well, I went back to the playground. And that was the end of that episode, right? But from that point on, Watts and I had no communications whatsoever, except an occasional malevolent glance. And I'd look around, there'd be Watts. I know what it was that made me mad about him. He never did anything. Never did anything. It's probably guys like that listening tonight, who just by the very nature of their being make other people butt. Not for anything you do. It's just the way. It's not even the way you are. It's that you're there, you know? You know that kind. Well, we shall now pass over the ensuing years. I go to high school. I'm involved in this, you know, this whole thing, 3,000 kids in high school. Never see Watts, except once in a while, going through the hall, looking even toadier than ever. As he got in high school, he grew wider, but not taller. His brain got more like cheesecloth. And his skin even got worse, if anything, and his glasses got thicker, and the adhesive tape on the ear pieces got heavier and more smudgy. And he always wore these sort of, you know, those sort of brown, yellowish Sears Roebuck type shirts? You know that kind? They look like they're made out of sort of dyed Reynolds wrap or something. Everything was wrong about Watts. When we were all wearing chinos, Watts was wearing corduroys. You know, that kind of stuff. Smelly ones. So there's Watts's watch. I see him once in a while. Never had anything to do with Watts. Okay. Graduation time comes. 650 of us are sitting in this damned auditorium. And we are graduates. Hotter than hell. Oh, God, was it hot. And there's a guy up there giving a speech. And he was a local Chevrolet dealer who also was the local undertaker. And he was giving the speech. And I remember him saying, "And now
We of the preceding generations pass along the torch of learning to younger, more vigorous hands.
Yeah, we're sitting there, geez, you know, the torch of learning is being passed on. The future of mankind is in our hands, Watts's hands, my hand. You know. Well, we're all sitting with these hats on. You graduated, right? Did you graduate, Jerry? How about you, Herb? Did you? Right, all right. I don't want to, you know, offend anybody here. You know, you wear that little that square thing, you know, that mortar or pestle or whatever they call it, with the big shaving brush hanging off the side. See, and we had opted, the class had decided, we had an election. See, we got a form around about a month before we were to graduate to decide what color our graduation robes were to be. We could have Oxford gray. We could have Stygian black. We could have cardinal red. Anyway, somewhere along the line, our class opted for royal blue. Well, I'll tell you this. One thing I discovered about royal blue, nothing shows sweat quicker than royal blue. There were 650 big blobs of royal blue sweat sitting in the auditorium there. And it was, oh, was it hot. And we had wearing these hats, and the sweat is running down my back. And finally, we go up to get our diplomas. And they were all piled up on a stage there on this table, and it had velvet over it. The table had velvet with the school colors, which was purple and sort of ratty white. And we all go past, and they hand out. And the thing happened to me that I've always feared, always happens. Every time anything official happens, some people, nothing ever goes wrong. I start getting this scary feeling from the minute I start walking up. I know they're going to screw it up. Of course, I open up the damn diploma. It's rolled up. It's got a leather thing on it. You know the whole thing. Open it up. They have misspelled my name on my diploma. Two P's, at least five A's, 34 or 35 R's, and a D. What the hell? They misspelled my name. And it was done in Old English script, you know, to be known forever, herefore, unto all comers and all inquirers, that the following has passed and all that. Well, that was, now it's all over. I'm out of school. You got that? Now we're coming ground rapidly. You think what this has nothing to do with Watts? Wait. Wait, friends. Watts. I'll tell you, wait. I am now in the Army. Well, I mean, tell you, you know, the Army is a pretty big deal. Before I went in the Army, see, I figured, well, what I was going to do, I was going to go in the Army, I was going to be this officer, see, I was going to be a captain, and because everybody that you see in the movies that are really heroes are always that kind of stuff. I mean, Van Johnson is never a PVT, no way. You can't see the adventures of PFC Sid McQueen, Steve McQueen. No, these guys are always... Yossarian was a captain, for God's sake. You should feel sorry for Yossarian. So, anyway, I get in the Army, and I'm not in the Army 3 days when I realize what a silly, ridiculous dream this was. Here was this whole mess hall, the first place I go to, which was Fort Sheridan, a gigantic camp. The first day I go there, I'm in this mess hall, the entire mess hall, there's about 5,000 people there, is in charge of a PFC. He's walking around, he's directing everything. It's, my God, a PFC. I never realized that doesn't seem, you know, the people outside, they see this guy with two stripes on, they think he's a soldier. Like hell he is. Back in that company, man, there's guys that hide under the barracks when he comes around, and I want to tell you, grown guys, right? You ever been in it? So, 2 years later, I have struggled up the chain of command, and I have made PFC. 2 years later, I keep getting these letters back from home. You know, my mother says, I met Johnny Anderson's mother on the street the other day, and he writes from Bangkok, and he wrote this letter, and I don't like to bring it up, but you know he's a staff sergeant, and he's here I am a PFC, and I can't figure out where the hell the secret is, you know. So I'm getting these letters. And then the worst thing happened. I am transferred. This is 2 years later. I am transferred to another place. I have been made a T5. Now, you don't know what a T5 is. Well, for those of you who are technically minded with the various ranks in the Army and know the order and chain of command, a T5 is almost a corporal. Not quite. He's technically a corporal, but they give him no command whatsoever because they don't think he can be a real corporal. But what he does, he should get a little more money, you know, because he works with the soldering irons or something like that, see? So they give you corporal stripes with a T under it, which says don't believe anything this guy says. You know, if a PFC tells him to go to hell, and the corporal says, wait a minute, and points at the stripes, the PFC can laugh if it's got the T under it. So I have made T5. It's been roughly 2.5 years of hard struggle. And I have done it all, man. I have seen the inside of so many grease traps. I know intimately every job that can conceivably be performed in every mess hall from here to quite probably New Guinea. And I'm a hard-bitten soldier, and I know damn well where the body lies in every conceivable direction. So I am now shipped. I don't know whether I should even tell you the story, even though it rankles. All right, I'll tell you the damn story. I am shipped to this company in an unnamed place, which I will not bring into. No sense in harming the innocent. I'm brought to this place, and I arrive at the company on a Friday afternoon, which is important. The minute I get in there, the guy who's in charge of the barracks, the corporal of barracks, corporal says, hey, he says, man, you better get on the stick. He said, we're having a big inspection tomorrow. And I says, yeah, oh boy, I always have to arrive the day before the inspection. Can't arrive the day after, all right. So I dump out my junk, and I start laying on my tent pegs and all that stuff, and I fold all the jazz back, and I fix up my foot locker and all the whole stuff. And that night, they say there's going to be a big inspection tomorrow, so we're going to GI the barracks. So I GI the barracks. I get up in the morning, I put up my clean ODs, and I'm sharp, ready for the big inspection at noon. And just before that, on the PA system comes the first sergeant. He says, the inspection will begin in about 6 or 7 minutes. All you guys down in barracks, say, make sure you have them butt cans clean. And by the way, the colonel will attend this inspection. The colonel will attend. Oh, my God, the colonel's going to attend. Not only the captain, not only the second lieutenants, but the colonel. I am standing in the damn barracks with my gut pulled in when the barracks corporal hollers, attention! Ready for inspection! And I stand in front of my... Who walks in? I don't have to tell you. God only knows where he got him. He was wearing Silver Eagles. What? What? He walks past with the captains and all that, and they're treating him like the Pope, you know. He is the Pope there. He's the camp commander. He walks through there, and he looks at me, and he says, soldier? And I said, yes, sir. He said, don't I know you? Haven't we served together before? Yeah, I don't think so, sir. Your face looks familiar. He knew damn well who it was. It was Handbone Shepherd. And he was rubbing it in. Haven't we served before? Your face looks familiar. And that toad in that tailor-made uniform waddled down to the end of the barracks with those big Silver Eagles. He was the only guy I ever saw that had batteries connected to the Silver Eagles. Lit up. Walks down to the end. Turns around and walks back. He whispers something to the sergeant. Sergeant turns and says, very good, man. The colonel says this was a very good barracks, except for a few odd individuals. The barracks was very fine. I'll have a name of you odd individuals later on. We'll talk about it after the parade. All right, you guys, at ease. I learned one of life's lessons. The toadier the person, the more carefully you handle him. He will grow to become the president one day, friend.